TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. The Jets-Leafs game, 6 p.m., live here on TSN1290. Hustler and Lawless follow us, Rick Ralph, and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 p.m. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. Coming up on the program in about an hour's time, Michael Trakos from the National Post is going to join us to preview the Jets-Leafs game. 1:30 this afternoon, Mike Hyka from the Dallas Morning News to talk about the Dallas Stars, a team we're going to see a lot more starting next season now that realignment has been approved. The Dallas Stars, of course, in the same division as the Winnipeg Jets. And then at 2 o'clock this afternoon, an interview with Mike Mazika from the Canada-Israel Hockey School. There's a group of hockey players from Israel in town. They're going to be playing a game tomorrow at the MTS Iceplex. So we're going to be talking about the Israeli hockey program and its development over the years. Richie, Ezzy, before that, we got to start with the Jets week in review, a week that is unequivocally a tremendous success for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, good afternoon, boys, first of all, and it really was the best two home games of the year as far as results go, as far as efforts go. After that game in New Jersey, Drew, and this is, you know, not anything new, the team and the fans and everyone were really upset about the Jets' performance. And even though the Jets ended up getting a point from that game in Newark, it was a terrible effort from the Jets. And they came back and they played two teams that they're battling for on a nightly basis for a playoff spot. And they came out with two wins and two very resounding wins. And considering that going into the game, the two game set, Richie, the Jets had only won four games at home and were, you know, knowing that they had all of these home games coming up towards the end of March and going into April, it was really impressive. And you can start with the way Pavlik played. You can go to the defense, the way they got secondary scoring from Antropov and Wellwood, to the way Andrew Ladd led the team. And, you know, we're going to get to the lineup changes a little bit later, but you can go up and down, you know, the result, and it really was resounding, and it's happening at the right time. And, you know, if the Jets have real desires of making the playoffs, they have to continue it, because as far as I'm concerned, knowing that you have these tougher games coming up, Toronto and Ottawa aren't going to be easy road wins at all, but when you've got the likes of Carolina, Pittsburgh coming up after next week. Next week, obviously, is Boston, who's really hot, and then you've got the Washington Capitals back-to-back. But to me, the meaty part of the schedule is coming up here. But you can't say enough. It was extremely impressive.
Richie, you know, we talked about this in the post-game podcast that we do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you look at the Jets team, the way they've played the last two nights, and if you're Coach Noel, you have to be wondering where has that been for the first, you know, 24 games of this season? And, you know, it almost seems like they just flipped a switch, and they determined that the lackadaisical efforts that we have seen from this team that had sort of been, you know, to some extent their trademark through the first, you know, half of the season, no longer are going to be the case.
I'd agree with that, Drew. I think that, you know, they're not always going to play well, but they need to play hard. And I think that's what your point is, and I think it's true. You could argue that the Jets, you know, have a lack of talent, and certain, you know, they lack, you know, talent up front. They really do. And, you know, they have obviously have an Enstrom injury in the back end. But overall, they're playing as a team, and they're playing hard. And they're becoming a little bit more difficult to play against. You know, they were a little more physical this week. They're dropping the gloves a bit.
Yep.
They're reacting. And they're also, you know, being proactive in what they're doing. And I thought the Leafs game was a nice test for them in terms of mentality. You know, what are they going to do to a team that tries to push them around? And I thought they stood up and they punched the bully back. And I thought, you know, Gary wrote about it in terms of the Thorburn fight and Orr punching after his jersey was off and maybe a little bit late. And the linesman ought to have jumped in there. But in any event, the team kind of rallied around that a bit. And I think that's true. I thought Thorburn's presence in that game was important. I know the classic complaint was, well, what's Thorburn going to do? You know, that Burmistraw is way more talented. But it's a different... Every game has its own story. And
that's
I thought in that game, they needed a bigger body because the Leafs will work the boards. The Leafs will try and intimidate you. And we'll discuss the Burmistraw issue later. But, I think Noel's done a nice job here getting them to buy in a little bit more. Sure, the special teams helps, success there, and sure, it helps to have Pavlik playing great hockey. But that's also, you know, these two parts of the are interrelated in that Pavlik doesn't play good hockey unless they play better defense. And they look like they play better defense, and they do when they know Pavlik's playing well.
Richie, it's cliche, but in the last two home games, they really put out a 60-minute effort from start to finish. Sure, there were letdowns and, you know, there were moments in the game where they weren't dominant, but they really were 60-minute efforts. It wasn't one good period or two good periods. It was really a team that you were watching that was in control of the game. Against the Toronto Maple Leafs and against the New York Rangers, they were the better team, and they deserved to win.
Well, to that point, Ezzy, you know, if you look at the last two games, and, you know, the six periods in the last two games, I think the Jets have probably won five of the six periods that they've been playing in. The only period that I thought New York that they lost was the New York, the second period in the New York game.
Yeah, I'll give that to you. Yeah,
you know, but I thought they swept the game in terms of in Toronto, and like you said about standing up to the bully and punching the bully. You know, is this team growing some backbone? You know, are they growing a real steady, sturdy spine that says we're not going to be the pushovers and the mentally weak club that we have seen at times. More often than not, I would say, over the past year and a half.
In my opinion, you know, when they were struggling and they were blowing games and they weren't performing, you know, after that Jersey game where they got a point but they really didn't show in other games, to me, you can read into Andrew Ladd's comments and Blake Wheeler's comments. Not everybody was on board. And to me, you could tell from body language. And so you can listen to it, but then you also see it. And you saw Ladd on TSN Jets talking. You could see, hey, you know, he didn't feel like, in my opinion, he didn't feel like everyone was on board. For whatever reason, if something's happened behind the scenes, maybe it has, maybe it hasn't, but it seems like over the past couple games, now that's not 10 games, that's a couple games, it seems like the group's on board a little more here. And boy, it's made a difference.
And Richie, feeding off the home crowd in these last two games is one thing, but you just mentioned it. If the Jets are going to make the playoffs here, and this goes for the Flyers, and it goes for any team right now who is kind of on the bubble. Mm-hmm. And right now, there are only a few teams, maybe four teams, who aren't on the bubble. Pittsburgh, Boston, Anaheim, Chicago. I mean, everyone else is in a nightly fight to get into the playoffs this year. You have to do that for a 10-game stretch, a 12-game stretch. They've done it here. The Jets have won four of their last five games, and you know the last 10, seven, I believe, out of their last 10. That's a nice run. And you got to do it again. You got to do it a few times. And I think that, you know, Andrew Ladd on a nightly basis has been their best player, whether it's compete level or whatever you want to say, scoring goals, leading the team. But, you know, a guy like Nikolai Antropov, where has he been the whole year? I mean, he's doing the simple things. You're 6'5", parking yourself in front of the net, tipping a shot from Bufflin against the Leafs, and then getting the rebound in the game against the Rangers. Something that he needs to do. Nikolai Antropov, you know, isn't blessed with the speed of Evander Kane. He's got to work with what he has. And quite frankly, he's starting to throw some body checks. He's starting to get physical, and he hasn't been doing that a lot. So you have to, you know, think to yourself, okay, well, why wasn't he able to do that earlier in the season? And
well, the answer to that question from a cynic, which I happily wear that hat, is that he's, you know, trying to get another contract. And if he had played, if he played the way he played for the first 20-plus games, you know, for the rest of this year, that contract isn't going to be forthcoming at a value that he wanted. If he starts playing hard for the next 25 games, you know, I put a big buyer beware sign on him, but the Winnipeg Jets can still take advantage of that for as long as he's on their roster.
I wouldn't disagree with you. I think you could very well be right. And as far as some of the other efforts on the team, I mean, it's not possible anymore to get away with, especially when you're a team that's in a fight and you're not the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Boston Bruins, you can't get away without going out there and giving a full effort when you're out there. And, you know, I know we're going to get into this later, but as far as Alexander Burmistrov goes, you know, the message has been sent. We know he's not playing again today, so this will be the third tonight, pardon me, this will be his third straight scratch. And he knows now that if he doesn't play well, he's not going to play. And you can say whatever you want about putting Chris Thorburn in the lineup. I defended the decision to put Thorburn in the lineup. But when he's out there, he does what he's supposed to do. If he plays 4 or 5 minutes, well, he gets into a fight when in those 4 or 5 minutes, he throws his weight around, he sticks up for his teammates. He doesn't have an easy job. I mean, being a guy that's asked to go fight, I wouldn't want to go fight Colton Orr, but that's the job that he has, and he does it well. So if that means that they're going to win, then I'm fully behind it.
You know, they played in that New York game, they really played with three lines, especially for that third period.
Yeah. But I think that was as much matching what the Rangers were doing. The Rangers were playing essentially three lines as well.
Yep, good point, Richie.
And they were really, what the Rangers were doing was protecting the fact that they didn't have Mark Stahl there. So they were really rolling all their best defensemen with the fourth, fifth, and sixth defensemen. So you had Anton Stralman playing a little bit more, but Hamrelick played, I think, 4 minutes in the game. And Steve Emminger hardly played. So what they were doing was the Rangers were loading up. Does auto play 27 minutes? So the Jets were kind of matching, I thought, some of the matchups put out there by Tortorella, who's trying to get that 2 points, obviously, and who's desperately trying to get that 2 points after the poor performance in Buffalo two nights before.
Their poor performance has continued. They actually are playing an afternoon game in Pittsburgh right now. A minute 30 into that game, a combination bad start and worse start for the Rangers. They're down 1-0. Bo Bennett has scored for the Penguins. Rick Nash has left the game with a right leg injury.
As an aside, in terms of just moving to the Rangers quickly, the Rangers desperately miss Mark Stahl, and a team like Pittsburgh that can roll out a dominant offense, even without Malkin, they're going to have a tough time matching up with them shift after shift. And you have to wonder, first off, you have to wonder why they would add Roman Hamrelick, considering A, he can't skate at the National Hockey League level anymore, and B, he's got a huge ticket. Because the huge ticket portion of that is cutting into the ability to acquire other players. And if he's not going to fulfill that spot at about, I forget who his exact salary is right now, but if he's not going to fill that spot, well, that money cuts into the next player that can fit that spot. And remember, in a salary cap system, money from to one player takes away money from the other player.
McDonough and Girardi are good defensemen, Richie, just quickly, but I think we're starting to see who the best defenseman on that team is. And Richie's right. As it's constructed right now, they've got issues, and they're going to have to make a move if Stahl's not coming back in the next few weeks, because they're quickly falling out of a playoff spot here.
And all due respect to the other defensemen on the squad, Stahl will solidify it, but we don't know what the situation is. I mean, 2 to 3 weeks they say, but there's no guarantee that he's back in 2 to 3 weeks. And even if he is back in 2 to 3 weeks, can he see at a level that will allow him to play at the National Hockey League? We saw with Manny Malhotra that Mike Gillis deemed him not to be able to see at a safe level. So it's a very dangerous situation. And with the Rangers, what's happened now is they've elevated Anton Stalman to the number four spot. Anton Stalman cannot play number four spot in a National Hockey League team that expects to win the Cup. McDonough's a beautiful player. Great player.
Yep.
Does auto looks good. Girardi hasn't had a great year. Didn't think he played very well against the Jets, but a solid defenseman. But there's a huge drop-off there from Stahl to Stroman.
I also think, in addition to the physical concerns, like you mentioned, with eyesight and everything, mm-hmm. I do believe that there is a psychological impact to being that close and having that much damage done to your eye. It's one thing if it's your shoulder, or you know, or it's your knee, or it's your leg, or something. Those things heal, and I don't think they cause the psychological impact that an eye injury does. So when he's back, and we don't know when that is, that I think is also a factor the New York Rangers will have to take into account. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 20 minutes past the top of the hour here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, conveniently located at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli that has been serving the best deli food for nearly 30 years. Tomorrow, for the first time in 14 years, Bernstein's Deli is going to open on Sunday morning starting at 9 a.m. I know that we will be first in line there right bright and early tomorrow morning to get our fill of breakfast and soup and sandwiches and cold cuts and really...
Don't forget gefilte fish.
Gefilte fish. I'm looking forward to it. You know, you can't go wrong with a good Bernstein's Deli lunch breakfast on a Sunday morning.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So tomorrow, Bernstein's Deli, 1700 Cordon Avenue, your home... really for the best in sort of traditional home-style food in the Cordon Village Mall. Gentlemen, Jeff Leafs coming up 6 o'clock tonight here on the station.
Just to qualify, Roman Hammer, like we talked about him last segment, his salary is a $3.5 million cap hit this year.
Right. Sorry, meant to mention that as well. So tonight, the Jets-Leafs game is 6 o'clock. The biggest, there's no lineup changes for the Jets. They're trotting out the same lineup. Burmistrov's still going to be a healthy scratch. The Jets lineup is going to be the same. The Leafs lineup will look different, and it'll look different with the addition of one guy named Joffrey Lupul.
Yep.
How big of an impact will the addition of Lupul have on the lineup, at least compared to the team you saw on Tuesday night?
Well, he provides a scoring presence pushes other players down and has a depth element to this as well. Lupul's a bigger player. He doesn't play that big. Not the best skater, but you know he's got pretty good vision. He's got a good shot, and he can score from... from anywhere, he's a bigger body. He's a big addition here, Drew. They gave him the contract extension. And, you know, what you see with Joffrey Lupul is, okay, you know, you have Kessel going, who's killed the Jets this year. I think 3 goals in the games that they've played. Kessel going, you have Bozak, and you have Van Riemsdyk. Well, then Lupul goes in there, and, you know, we'll ask Michael Trakos if that's going to change the lines and exactly how they're going to set up tonight. But Lupul provides that second, you know, another top six player there. And then you look at it from the Jets' perspective. Well, that makes the Jets' defending more difficult because, of course, you have two lines now which you have to defend, not one, really. I mean, in all honesty, I mean, Kadri's obviously been dangerous, so I don't want to disrespect Kadri. But the Leafs don't have a ton of offensive depth. They have some speed, and they have some guys who can hurt you. But overall, this is a pretty big addition for Toronto. And it's going to be huge for Toronto, a team that's struggling, Ezzy, and then needs to get out of that, out of those struggles quickly because they're going to find themselves on the outside of the playoff race chasing, and it's not a position where you want to be, especially when you played so well the first half of the season. And I realize that there, you know, a couple of the reasons why they're playing so well, there's obviously luck factors and such, but even so, they're in that position, and I'm sure they don't want to blow it, so his addition is huge.
And sorry, Ezzy, I mean, the impact of this game, I mean, the Jets obviously have third, you know, overall in the conference as their target.
Yep.
But if they're not, you know, and they're going to battle with Carolina for that. But just to be able to leapfrog another team in the Eastern Conference standings, which they can do with a clean victory tonight and still have a game in hand on the Toronto Maple Leafs, is impactful. So as much as you want to battle for third, if you can battle for third while sitting in a position of fifth or sixth, it's a lot better, obviously, than being in a position of eighth or ninth and battling for third.
You know, Drew, when we're previewing these games, and we preview every Jets game, you know, you talk about, you know, the statement or how important the game is, and, you know, it goes without saying that all of these games are really important. And I think it is significant that they're playing the Leafs and the Rangers this week at this time, a couple points out of a playoff spot. Now they're obviously in a playoff spot, but going into the Tuesday night game, they weren't. Because it's not only the fact that it puts you in the playoffs now, it's setting the table for later games. And the Jets are going to have some tough games coming up. The Carolina Hurricanes, they play twice coming up in the next couple weeks. And, you know, they're playing the Capitals who are struggling. But the Hurricanes, they've got the Pens, the Bruins. This is going to set the table for the next few weeks. And I think it is very important. And, you know, just back to what Richie was saying about Lupul, though. You know, as it stands right now, we're hearing that, you know, Lupul isn't going to go on the top line and Van Riemsdyk is going to stay on the top line. I don't know if that's going to stay like that for now. But, Richie, in that game on Tuesday night that the Jets played against the Leafs, I thought that the only dangerous line was Van Riemsdyk, Kessel, and Bozak. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Nazem Kadri, he's got great speed and he's been playing well, but he didn't have his best game. And, you know, I look at Grabowski, Kuhlman. I wrote about that in my game day preview for illegalcurve.com. Those guys, you know, have no goals in their last 3 or 4 games. Yeah. They really didn't have much of an impact. Grabowski is another guy, had his career year last year. But, I mean, up and down the lineup, those are smaller forwards. Mm-hmm. So a guy like Lupul steps in there, I agree. You can put him on another line, and it makes that second line, third line, whatever you want to call it, better.
you look at the Leafs lines and how they lined up against the Jets on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that first line was Bozak, Kessel, and Van Riemsdyk. The second line was Grabowski, Fratton, and Kuhlman. The third line was Kadri in the middle with Komarov and MacArthur on his wings. What Lupo does is he pushes down one of those guys, and it depends. I mean, some of these guys play both sides of in terms of left and right wing. But Lupo with either Kadri or Lupo with either Kadri or Grabowski is a significant difference. And Kadri and Grabowski are both offensively talented players. I mean, the Leafs up the middle, I mean, they have no superstars, and the Bozak question, the pending free agency, is going to be an important one. Something we're going to ask Michael Trakos about as well. But you look at those, you know, Bozak's a pass-first player. Grabowski and Kadri can both create. Lupo with one of those two centers is going to be a dangerous combination.
It was an optional skate for the Leafs this morning, so we did not get to see the Lions in practice. Worth noting, Ben Scrivens will be in net for the Toronto Maple Leafs today. Second straight start for him.
Yep.
He obviously played in the Pittsburgh game on Thursday night. Looks like the defense will also remain intact from Thursday night.
Well, that's interesting.
That the defense is staying the same?
Yes, because... Well, first off, I think it's interesting the Leafs, how they're fast up front and smaller and bigger on the back end and slower, which I don't think is a coincidence when you're one and the other. But the defense, to me, is an interesting one because I thought that the Leafs' defense as a whole had a lot of trouble handling the jet speed.
Yep. I agree.
And I thought that was actually the key to the game. They couldn't handle the jet speed. The Jets... And the Jets aren't a fast team compared to many other ones, but their faster skaters were causing a lot of problems, whether it be Kane, whether it be Wheeler, certain other guys in the squad that are able to pressure and cause trouble. And the Leafs on the back end against the Jets, I mean, guys like Holzer, guys like Koska, Franzen even, and Fraser, I mean, those guys aren't fleetest of foot. And it takes them a while, and if they don't, you know, if they're not in the right position and the team's not playing as a nice five-man unit, they have a lot of problems defending.
Now, Koska, who was in Tuesday night against the Jets, was out on Thursday. John Michael Lyles took his place on Thursday.
Right.
What does John Michael Lyles bring to the Leafs' defense?
Well, Lyles is a more mobile player, a guy who can move the puck better than Koska. You got to love Koska's story, but he can move the puck better than Koska. Doesn't move the puck that badly, but he's a better skater and less physical, a little bit smaller. But I think... based upon, and I know they made the switch for Thursday, but based upon Tuesday's game, Lyles in there makes a lot more sense to me.
Yep.
And then what you have is kind of puck movers like Gunnarsson, and Lyles allows you to play a different kind of game against the Jets. And I think a game that probably is what you want to lean towards.
Right. And now, you know, 5 days later, you've got Joffrey Lupul in there, John Michael Lyles. A couple of years ago when the Leafs acquired John Michael Lyles, we were, you know, praising it, and you know, his game has fallen off a little bit. But I'm expecting a tight game here. The Leafs, having lost four games in a row, and they really only fell apart, if you watch that game in Pittsburgh in the third period. Pittsburgh hadn't scored, but a team like Pittsburgh can explode at any time. That's why they're so dangerous. But this is a team, though, that's going to get a huge boost. And... I think that's, you know, probably an indication that the Jets aren't going to be able to get an easy win here. But the Leafs, again, they're in this almost a similar position as they were last year, in that they were kind of in the middle of the pack of being a playoff team, and now they're starting. Are we starting to see their lack of depth, or is this a team that's going to be able to gut it out and to get a playoff spot? Pardon me, because we know that Randy Carlyle has them playing very well, and I think they've overachieved to this point. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to Randy Carlyle, because you look at the guys on the team, and really.
It's the same lineup as they had last year.
It's the same essentially lineup as last year. They made a few moves, but you know, they're ahead of the Flyers, they're ahead of the Rangers, they're ahead of the Lightning. They're ahead of a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference, and they're really doing it scoring with one line.
We spoke about this on the post game podcast on Tuesday, Drew. So just to, I guess, establish this point, I thought one of the keys to the Jets' success against Toronto on Tuesday was the Jets' ability to plug the neutral zone. And they didn't let the Leafs create any speed, or make the passes that they were usually able to make from the back end, because their defensemen aren't the best skaters. I mean, Lyles will help that. The puck wasn't getting to the forwards, and the puck wasn't getting in on the forecheck, and the Jets were clogging the zone. And I thought the Leafs looked a little bit confused. I'm interested to see if the Jets will do the same thing in the neutral zone tonight. The question is, how do the Leafs manage that? Do they change? Well, I'm assuming they're going to change what they were doing and give a different look, and maybe not let the Jets set up as much. I think one thing the Jets have been doing as well is when a team has a problem getting through the neutral zone, sometimes what they do is they get the defenseman back in their own zone and they pause and they let everybody set up. That lets the other team set up. I wouldn't be surprised if the Leafs were a little bit more quick in terms of their transition passes outside the zone.
That's what I was going to say. Probably the most noticeable thing about the Jets' play in the last two games has been how quickly they've been able to transition out of their own zone. And that's the beauty. You look at this Jets team, they are loaded with guys who can make a very good first pass and can get the puck out of their zone as quickly as they can. Now, they had been struggling to do that to a point this year, but the last two games has been the best they've done that in a while. That'll be another interesting thing to see if they're able to continue with that strong transition game like they had on Tuesday night against the Leafs. Puck drop 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290. The Jets and the Leafs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or give them a call at 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers. Gentlemen, it's a two-game weekend for the Jets. Obviously, tonight's game against the Toronto Maple Leafs at the Air Canada Center. And then tomorrow evening, tomorrow afternoon, I guess late afternoon, the Jets move down the highway and they play the Ottawa Senators in another key matchup in terms of standings. The Jets are only 2 points behind the Senators for fifth overall in the Eastern Conference. Senators are another team that has been, obviously they've been struggling to some extent given their injuries, but not nearly as much as you would think given how banged up they are and the dearth of talent that they're trotting out there on a night in and night out basis. The fact they're 4-2-4 in their last 10 is a remarkable achievement for that team. What are the weaknesses now for the Ottawa Senators, and why haven't other teams been able to exploit them?
Well, Drew, I mean, Paul McLean, first of all, gets a ton of credit, and he's getting this squad, however he's doing it, to be able to get points. Now, you mentioned 4-2-4. They've lost those four overtime shootout games, but hey, they're getting points. And if they can stay in the top eight, they don't really care about the tiebreaker. So credit where credit's due, and, you know, Kyle Turris, we talked about a couple weeks ago how Kyle Turris was going to be elevated to that top, probably over a couple weeks ago now, elevated to that top center role. How could he handle it versus other top defenders? And he really hasn't performed that well. You know, and Spezza's return, apparently it's maybe a setback, may not be, but that could still be as much as a month away.
On that point, if you hear that he's had a setback, the team's never going to admit it, but my suspicion is he's probably had a setback.
But you look at the squad and you say, on paper, how have they done it? Well, it's the idea of playing as a team, and they are loading up on their veterans on the back end. You know, Chris Phillips, Sergei Gonchar, these guys are playing big minutes. And I don't mind that at all. You know, again, if Gonchar's on the last year of his deal, might as well use him. The guy got paid a lot of money over the course of this contract. But when you have these injuries to Carlson, you can't elevate the young players and then play them 18 to 22 minutes in game. It's a lot of responsibility. So what you do is you log more responsibility on your veterans who have done it before, who may not do it as much anymore. You know, Phillips and Gonchar in their primes played big, big minutes. So they know what it's like. And for a shorter period of time and a shorter season, well, yeah, you probably feel like we can ride these guys and see what we can get out of it. So I like the decisions he's made lineup-wise. And he just has a calm, poised demeanor. And you could see that Paul McLean is arguably one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League. You know, he worked for many years with Mike Babcock, who you could say the same about. And, you know, has he used the excuses? Has he leaned on
Absolutely
any crutches?
Absolutely not.
And I have to say, it's an impressive job. And Brian Murray, to his credit also, hasn't panicked and made some short-term move. And, of course, I mean, we also drew it. It's a long-winded answer, but I think there's a lot of explanations that need to be provided here. You know, Mika Zibanejad, he's got 6 goals. The youngsters have also played well. Some of the younger defenders have elevated and played a good job in the roles that they've been thrown into. It's been it's been a collective job over in Ottawa and an impressive one. And even if they don't make the playoffs, credit where credit is due. This team is not throwing the towel in. I mean, at times here, you'll hear fans complain, we don't have Tobias Enstrom, he's injured. Yeah.
The Ottawa doesn't have Carlson, Spezza, Mihalik.
I mean, and there's really been one injury here for a while. So it's either Bogosian or Enstrom, that's it.
Richie, for me, aside from the Montreal Canadiens, and no disrespect to the Montreal Canadiens because they're playing really well, and no disrespect to the Ottawa Senators, the biggest surprise for me has been the fact that the Ottawa Senators, without Erik Karlsson, without Jason Spezza, without Mihalik, are sticking around or in fifth place in the Eastern Conference. And the way they're doing it is they're getting really good goaltending, they're winning close, low-scoring games, and they're getting goals from the guys that had to step up. And you hear that a lot, that you know players have to step up. But Chris Phillips and Sergei Gonchar have a combined 35, 40 years of NHL experience. Those guys were already playing well with Karlsson in the lineup, but those guys have elevated their minutes. And, you know, Chris Phillips, to me, is another guy that has played with Ottawa his entire career. He's going out there, and he's leading by example. He's having an unbelievable season. And then you mentioned Gonchar, and is playing really well defensively. But, you know, they're one of the lowest scoring teams in the NHL, and they're getting, right now, I believe Ben Bishop is going to start tonight and possibly even tomorrow, maybe not. But, you know, Robin Leonard's been in there, and he's struggled a little bit. He's the goalie of the future. But they're getting good goaltending from multiple goaltenders. And they're getting by with half of their defense being an AHL defense, like Pat Wierkoch and Andre Benoit. You know, but Paul McLean has them playing a specific amount of minutes. And, you know, they're getting the job done. And you know, hockey is a team game. That's what you look at, you know, for all of us analyzing goals and assists and points and power play and all that stuff. That's extremely important, and you have to take that into consideration. But you know, they're playing well as a team, and they know that they don't have their best forward, and they know that they don't have their best defenseman. So what are they doing? They've changed their style a little bit. Paul McLean has instilled them with the confidence that they can beat teams. And, you know, the Jets fans aren't going to want to hear this, but the Ottawa Senators have only lost one regulation game at home. It's incredible.
And that was to the Winnipeg Jets.
One game.
Now, the Jets,
I guess that'll make Jets fans happy then.
Yeah. Sorry, Richie, go ahead.
Well, you know, we forgot to mention Jared Cowan, too.
Right. He's also been very good.
Yeah.
Well, oh, sorry, injured. Sorry,
he hasn't played a single game this year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're looking at Jared Cowan being out before the season begins. Erik Karlsson, obviously. The craziest part, Erik Karlsson's still sixth on the team in points, but he played 14 games. He went out.
Yeah.
So Karlsson and Cowan, half of your top four. Half of it.
Speaking of that, Richie, isn't Jordan Eberle still leading the AHL in scoring?
but you look at their defense. You know, think about this for a second. Take a step back and say, what would this defense have looked like had the players been healthy? Now, Karlsson and Mathot playing together. You have Cowan and Phillips, or Cowan and Gonchar, however you want to set it up. And then you have Gonchar or Phillips as your 5 or 6 guy. And instead, you have Gonchar playing 24 minutes and 35 seconds a game. 24 minutes and 35 seconds for Sergei Gonchar. I mean, that's very significant for an older guy who is faded. And let's be honest, he's faded over the past couple of years. And give him credit, you have Chris Phillips logging 20 minutes, and Chris Phillips plays a tough game. Chris Phillips doesn't play an easy 20 minutes.
Bruising game.
Gonchar makes a deal. He's not a great skater, but he can move, and he's a great puck mover.
He's not as physical as a Chris Phillips. You're right. The 20 minutes that Phillips plays, like as you said, are a bruising 20 minutes.
But when you're looking at the Senators, what can you take advantage of? Well, there's many portions of the game you can take advantage of. It's the defense is young, is fairly inexperienced, and isn't that mobile. For all you want, Gonchar can move the puck, not a great skater anymore. Phillips isn't a great skater. You have some guys back there who don't move that well. And then you look at, the offense. Well, their leading scorer is Kyle Turris with 15 points in 27 games. So they're getting offense from all over, quote-unquote, somehow, but not really much offense.
Right.
So the offense isn't great. And the defense, I think, you can take advantage of in a couple of different ways. The guys that they have in there really do have a fair amount of drawbacks, whether it be Mathot's offensive or offensively or whatever it may be. So it's a game on paper that you should win, but you don't play the games on paper. They should have beat Florida 2 weeks ago on paper. So don't take them lightly, and you are playing a back-to-back.
Well, and let me ask you this about that. Would you expect to see if he's healthy? And that's the question. I mean, we don't know. He's on the trip. But if he's healthy, do you expect to see Al Montoya tomorrow?
If he's healthy, you'd think so, Drew. I think it's important, especially now in the Jets' situation where They don't need to win every game. It's not a must win or they're out. I think you do need to take into account Pavlik's long-term performance. And I think if, without giving him some days off, and especially considering the schedule next week, you're looking at a Saturday, Sunday this weekend.
Yep.
Then you're looking at Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday. If I'm Noel, if Montoya's healthy. If Montoya's not healthy, I'm not throwing Pasquale in there. I keep Pavlik. Yep. But if Montoya is healthy enough to play, I play him on Sunday, and then I play him on the Friday of the Washington game in town.
And I think I agree with Richie, but the Montoya injury situation is murky. It seems like he's day-to-day, and you know they didn't want to have Pasquale up, but they had to, knowing that Montoya might not even be good enough to be the backup.
Well, that's their risk, is that if they trot Montoya out before he's 100%, maybe he goes and he pulls something again, and he's out for 2 weeks, and then you got to ride Pavlik for 2 weeks, because with all due respect to Eddie Pasquale, you just don't have the confidence that he can start a game for a team that, I mean, right now is in a situation where they're, you know, every point is so important to them.
Right, and, you know, I did a little research before the show, because I know, Drew, you don't know that I ever do research before the show.
I didn't know you could read.
I'm just learning. I mean, Hooked on Phonics is maybe working for me. But in the last four games for Andre Pavlik, his save percentage is .941, and his goals against is 1.75. So even though he might need a little bit of a break, he's arguably playing the best hockey he's played in Jets 2.0 history. So he's playing really well. So that helps. But again, when you've started 24 out of 27 games,
it wears on you.
It wears on anybody, even me. I'm in peak physical shape, as you know.
Peak. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, your home of the Winnipeg Jets. Coming up, we're going to discuss the Jets lineup changes with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, get in touch with him at 230-6129. One more time, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Gentlemen, the big news out of Jets camp this week, aside from the games, is that Alex Burmistrov has been made a healthy scratch for the last two games. He'll continue to be a healthy scratch for tonight's game. Obviously, we don't know yet about tomorrow's game. In your opinion, was this a warranted move? Did Alex Burmistrov need to sit down in the press box for at least one game? And how do you think it's... Do you like the fact that it's now been three games?
With the exception of, well, the last week, you know, I've thought that Alexander Burmistrov has been really good this year. I think when we did our quarter grades, I gave him an A because of the way that he's hustled and he's played physically. He's up there in the hits leaders. He's only got 7 points, Richie, this year. He's not putting the puck in the net as much as he would like, as much as Claude Noel or the entire coaching staff would like. That's not a surprise. You know, everyone was talking about Burmy and how he was laughing on the bench during that game on the road. I believe it was against the Devils. I might be mistaken about that. And that didn't look good. I'm not really sure if that was it or if it was his general play and attitude, Richie, but, you know, he's gotten Claude Noel's doghouse. And, you know, they've won two games since he was put up in the press box. As far as was it warranted, you know, I know Alexander Burmistrov has become a fan favorite here in Winnipeg, and he's young, and he's in the last year of his entry-level deal, and there's a good chance that he'll get either a 2 or 3 year contract, maybe even more. We'll let our capologist, Richie Pollock, answer that question. But he has been inconsistent this year, and to be honest with you, I thought Nikolai Antropov should have been the guy that was benched. I believe if you played our show last week, we were talking about that. Pardon me. I have a hair in my throat.
Well, then you choke, and we'll let Richie answer.
Yeah, I'm completely fine with the Burmistrov benching. I think you're looking at long-term here, whether or not the Jets have a long-term vision for him or not, looking at long-term development of a younger player. And I don't have an issue. I realize that, you know, Burmistrov is better than the next player that they're going to replace him with, you know, talent-wise. We know that, because Burmistrov is better than a lot of players in the Jets roster talent-wise. But there are certain parts to his game that haven't really changed, and I think significant parts to his game. He has a tendency, for whatever reason, to move away from the net, not towards the net. And, you know, it's the classic going east-west more than going north-south. And I don't have an aversion to an east-west player, but he only goes east-west, really. There are certain weaknesses to a game that, again, I don't think he has improved. And for whatever reason, there appears to be maybe an attitude issue. Whether there is or not, I don't know, because I'm not in the room. But I don't mind when coaches bench younger players to send a message. And, you know, some people will say, well, he gave us the best chance to win that night. Sure, but sometimes those same people say they want to look at this team, you know, from the big picture. And if you want to look at it from the big picture, this is small potatoes. This is a portion of his development. And he hasn't even been performing that well. So the person you're putting in place of him, whether it be Thorburn, whoever it may be who's in place of him, there might be a drop down and a little bit of a difference in talent. Sure, but at the end of the day, what is the difference that it makes in the long haul? How does it change the team? And is there a sense of entitlement? We talk about the cultural issues, whether you want to, you know, pay them any attention or not. Him being benched proves to you, or proves to the younger players on the team that are both on the team now and are coming up through the team, that if you do certain things or don't do certain things or have a certain attitude or don't have a certain attitude, that you may find yourself in the press box. And it's more the earning ice time. And I understand the idea of benching him over Antropov in the sense that you don't have Antropov as a long-term project here, and you see Burmistrov as either a long-term project or a player you'll be trading for something that you hope will be an asset. But Antropov, you know, is a limited asset, and Burmistrov is an asset you can get a lot more for if he does play better. Or he can be an asset for you. So I don't have an issue with it at all, and you have to let the coach do his job. And also, leading back to what we said at the beginning of the show, to me, Ladd, Wheeler, and those players seem to indicate that not everybody was on board. Maybe they had a talk with Coach Noel. We don't know, but maybe they did and said, hey, this guy's not on board. So a lot of possibilities there, but I don't have an issue with it. I like the idea of the leadership of the team making decisions that they think gives them the best chance to win, maybe now, but I think definitely later.
I have two questions for you. One, what do you think about that's now going on game three that he hasn't been in the lineup? And two, do you think that the Jets are unsure what they have in Alex Burmistrov as a player? Is he an offensive player? Is he a shutdown third line, shutdown third line defensive player? Are they still trying to figure out what they have in Alex Burmistrov?
First off, Drew, that was four questions. But I'm going to get in here quickly and let Richie give his opinion as well. I think, first off, when he's not playing his third straight game, well, the Jets are winning, and, you know, I think the decision's been made that they're going to keep the roster as currently constructed without Burmy, even though they probably could put him in for Cormier, who only played just under 4 minutes. So I think they're going to just stick with what's been working. But I think the Jets don't know what exactly they have. My personal opinion, and I bet Richie would agree with me, is that Burmistrov, his offensive production that he had in Barrie, I don't think is going to translate to the NHL level. I don't necessarily think Burmy is ever going to be a 30-goal, 70-point player. I think Burmistrov is a guy that's got limited offensive skill, great speed, and thinks the game well and is a smart player and can get dirty and go into the corners, but I don't necessarily think that he's ever going to be a first liner or maybe even a second liner. I do think that he is going to be more of a defensive forward. So in that sense, maybe the Jets don't necessarily know that they don't know what they have, but maybe they're trying to see how he reacts. And really, you know, Richie mentions that he doesn't have a problem with the Burmistrov benching, and it's easy to say this, but the proof is in the pudding. They won the two games that he wasn't in the lineup. And even though it's easy to say that, well, why was that? Well, maybe because it allowed for other players to increase their intensity level, and the team, it sent a message to the rest of the team that they have to step their games up.
And maybe it had no role at all. We don't know. But I don't have an issue with Noel not changing the lineup. If the team is playing as well as they are right now, coaches don't change the lineup. That's just the way it is. So I don't have an issue with that. especially because they're now playing a team that they already played and they beat with this lineup.
Right.
If you look at one thing, I think we also, not overlooking, but we haven't mentioned, remember Robin Short coming on the show in December? And saying, you know, I don't know if Bermistrov's, he's injured right now. I'm not sure if he's even going to come back here. And this was before the lockout was resolved. Craig Heisinger is a big part of the Winnipeg Jets organization. He runs St. John's, but he's around the team here. And his what he has to say means a lot, obviously. He's the assistant general manager. But if, why wouldn't Bermistrov have gone back there? And what was the performance? Clearly, he didn't perform well. Statistically, he didn't perform well in St. John's. But, I mean, what does that mean? Robin Short said, you know, by watching him, he didn't perform well really at all. And you have to wonder if he took it seriously or not.
So you have concerns about his engagement level?
Well, to an extent, that might be a case. I don't know. But the point is, what he did in St. John's will have a will play a factor organizationally in how he's viewed here. Because development and AHL is taken very seriously in this organization, as it is in many others. But I think especially with the way this organization is run. And if he doesn't respect the process and respect what he has to do to become a better player, then I think that's going to be held against him, rightfully so, in my opinion, when it comes to making decisions like this.
We saw that with Spencer Mihajcek, who, by all accounts, had a bit of a negative attitude over having to go back to St. John's after the lockout ended. He thought he had earned a spot on this team. He didn't get it. Went to St. John's, didn't perform. By the sounds of it, he did not have the right attitude. And lo and behold, he's no longer a member of this organization.
Drew, if Alexander Bermistrov, when he comes back, because I'd be surprised if he's a healthy scratch for the rest of the season.
No, I don't think he'll be a healthy scratch.
When Alexander Bermistrov comes back, how he plays, his attitude, his demeanor, everything, will determine what kind of future he has with the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, he'll be an RFA coming up in July 1st, and, you know, the way he's played so far, I wouldn't give him a five-year contract. And, you know, the way he's played is going to determine whether they decide to sign him for one, two, or maybe even move him and don't consider him a future of this organization. That's the thing to me that I'm going to be looking at with Alexander Bermistrov. How does he react to being in the bench, in the press box for three games, four games, whatever? Because his play tailed off, and he wasn't doing the things that he was doing to be successful early in the season. And as you guys know, I'm a big fan of Bermy. I think he does a lot of good things out there that aren't just, you know, scoring goals and getting assists. So I think that, you know, it's really only up to him as far as his future with this team.
Especially because I think right now with the Jim Slater injury, this team could use Alex Bermistrov's defensive responsibility in the lineup. There is an opportunity, I think, for him to play a role there, and an important role that right now is, you know, it's being filled by Patrice Cormier to some extent, but Patrice Cormier is certainly not Jim Slater at this point in his career.
And he only played 4 minutes the last game, so you can tell that Noel is going to be very careful with how much he uses him.
Right.
As opposed to Bermistrov, who could play 15, 20 minutes a game.
Well, Bermistrov, when he gets back into the lineup, if the team says to him, the role we want for you right now is to be sort of a shutdown defensive guy, you know, Jim Slater, you know, a Jim Slater-esque role. And for the record, Bermistrov can be better at playing the role of Jim Slater than Jim Slater is. I think that there's an opportunity there. The question is the attitude right? Is his head on straight to fill that role for the Winnipeg Jets? Because right now, you know, Kane, Jokinen, and Miettinen are going well, so there's no real need for him to take on a second-line role when coming back into the lineup. Let's go to break. When we come back, Michael Trakos of the National Post is going to join us to preview the Jets and Leafs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the National Post. He covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. Michael Trakos, good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, guys?
Doing very well ourselves. Thank you very much. Going to be a fun night at the ACC tonight. The Jets and the Leafs with their rematch from the Tuesday night contest. Michael, with Joffrey Lupul set to return to the lineup after missing 25 games, do you expect Randy Carlyle to break up the James Van Riemsdyk, Tyler Bozak, and Phil Kessel line?
No, that line is going to stay intact. And that line's actually been really good, even in this kind of four-game slide that they've been on. They're still scoring goals and generating chances. But the interesting thing with Lupul coming back is now you got three, I think, real balanced scoring lines, because Lupul's going to go with Nazem Kadri, who's been really good this year, real creative, and I think one of their best, probably the best center this year. He's going to play with Kadri and Nick Kuhlman on what you call the second or third line, and then you've got Mikhail Grabowski playing with Clark MacArthur and Matt Fratton on another line. So I think you got three lines that can actually do some damage there, which is something that Toronto has really kind of lacked this year, is that balanced scoring attack where all three lines can really kind of hurt you.
Michael, you know, you talk about that first line, it's been playing really well, and Tyler Bozak's kind of an interesting case, you know, in that he's a pending UFA. And, I mean, it was talked about a little bit when the Leafs visited here on Tuesday. But you know, what are the Leafs going to do about handling the Bozak situation? Like, are they considering at all trading him? Or is this a matter of the question of either re-signing him now, maybe re-signing him before free agency, or letting him go?
Well, I know contract talks haven't begun with Bozak's agent in the Leafs, and part of the reason there is I think they'd like the fact that he's got that contract hanging over him, and you see it with a number of guys where they play a little bit better. It's kind of a carrot for the player. Mm-hmm. I still think they're a bit undecided as to whether or not they want to bring him back or not. I don't think he's a guy that you move just because you move him and it kind of hurts your chances of either making the playoffs or kind of at least even going around or too deep into the playoffs. So I think he's kind of in a situation where they're going to revisit it after the season. And a lot of it's going to depend on what's out there free agent-wise, or if there's a trade to be made and you bring in a Stastny or Earl Weiss from Florida, someone like that. But, yeah, right now I want to say they're happy with what Bozak's doing, but they're okay with it. He wins a lot of faceoffs. Mm-hmm. He's good on the penalty kill, and he doesn't really hurt you on that top line, because even though he's not getting a whole lot of points, I think he's got like around 15 points, which is kind of weird because Kessel's got 26 and Van Riemsdyk's got 14 goals and 21 points. So those two guys are getting their points, you know, regardless of whether Tyler's even factoring in.
Michael, I know you wrote about this earlier this week in the National Post, so I'm going to ask you the question and try to get your personal opinion, but do you think that the lack of experience on the Leafs' blue line is being exposed now that we're getting to the nitty-gritty part of the season and the playoffs are on the line here?
Yeah, I was wondering when this was going to happen, because we had a number of players who were on the Leafs' lineup and probably lineups throughout the NHL where they played in the minors, and they basically earned a spot on the team because they already had that kind of, they're already in the midway point when the lockout ended. And the Leafs have a number of those guys, like Mark Frazier, Mike Koska, Corbinian Holzer, and Nazem Kadri up on the forwards. And I was wondering, once everyone kind of got up to speed and the games ramped up and the competition level increased, whether those guys are going to be exposed. And I think we're seeing a lot of that right now. And Mike Koska has been out of the lineup. He's expected to be another healthy scratch tonight, so that'll be two straight games for him. And I don't think Mark Frazier is necessarily playing bad, but it's just a lot of these guys you're just seeing, and whether it's experience or whether it's just that the level of play is just beyond them. But with a guy like Corbinian Holzer, it's just you're seeing them exposed more and more now. And I wonder if that's just a factor of what you're saying is experience, or if it's just these guys just aren't good enough to be playing big-time minutes in the NHL when we're basically in kind of like playoff mode hockey right now, where every game really matters.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Michael Trakos. He covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the National Post. Michael, there's another defenseman playing in Toronto, but playing with the Toronto Marlies. I think his name is Jake Gardner, if I'm not mistaken. And the hashtag is Free Jake Gardner, according to his agent. Were those comments by his agent a distraction at all for the players?
I don't think it was a distraction, although I don't think it hurt or helped the case for Jake Gardner, because he's basically in the same situation that Nazem Kadri was in last year, where everyone in this Toronto market is saying, why don't bring up the kid? He can help you. And the Leafs are just, they've got a good situation down there with Dallas Eakins, the head coach. He's great at developing players. And Jake's playing, I think, 30-plus minutes a night. The other night he logged, I think, 35 minutes. They've only got five defensemen back there, so he's just playing in every situation. And I think right now is the worst time to kind of bring him up. I am kind of, I'm one of those guys that you put me in the camp where I thought he'd be up here, and I thought he'd be up here by now. But with the team on a four-game losing streak, I think this is the worst time that you could bring him up. And I think we're going to see Jake Gardner very soon, with or without those agents' comments. It's just, it's a matter of putting him into a situation where the Leafs think he can actually succeed. And I don't think they want to bring him up and send him down, bring him up and send him down again. And he is approaching that 70-game mark where he would have to clear waivers if they brought him up. And I think he played two or three more games. So it's kind of a delicate situation. I think they only want to bring him up if they think that he's going to be completely ready to play top 4 minutes, and he's not going to be exposed at all.
Michael, looking at the goaltending situation, and you know, you have James Reimer and Ben Scrivens, are the Leafs riding out with these two players for the rest of the season? And if so, which one do you think is the one who takes the bull by the horns and starts playing the majority of the time down the stretch?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like right now, we got Scrivens, who played last game against Pittsburgh, and he looked good aside from the two goals he let in the final like 8 minutes. But he'll get the start again tonight against Winnipeg. And you know, both guys have been giving you like decent goaltending. I wouldn't say anyone's really kind of taking the bull by the horns and really cemented themselves as the number one. But I think Carlo's happy enough to just kind of play the hot hand as he's got it. And kind of a similar situation that he had in Anaheim, where he would play Brizgalov one night, he played Jaguar the other night. I'm not saying those guys are at that caliber yet, but I think Randy Carlo, he's familiar with this. He's okay with not having a prototypical guy that he's just going to roll out regardless of what he did the previous night.
Michael, you mentioned, you know, Randy Carlyle being comfortable with the goaltending situation, but what about his team as the whole? You know, they've lost four games in a row here. Do you get a sense that they're panicking at all, Randy Carlyle and the rest of the coaching staff?
Not really, because, you know, they're still sticking to that system that he's been preaching from day one, which is work hard, play responsible, don't take a ton of chances, and when you've got your opportunity, make sure you capitalize. And Pittsburgh game was a perfect example of that. They could have gone into kind of a trading chances type game that they that would have definitely burned them with all the talent that Pittsburgh has. But you know, they played a boring, really efficient game, and they almost snuck out a 1-0 win. They score on one of those power plays in the third period, or Leo Komarov scores on his breakaway. Then that's a win for Toronto. So I look in the sense that they're panicking at all. I think they kind of did learn a bit from what they went through last year, where when the wheels started to fall off, that they really got away from what made them successful. So you hope those learning lessons are kind of seeping in and are going to take hold now, because you know, 1 year later, these guys are a bit older and they've got that experience under them.
Michael, you look at the trade deadline upcoming in early April, and you mentioned before, you know, the depth on defense and whether or not, I guess, those players are talented enough to play, because if they aren't, then the Leafs have to replace them. They don't carry much trade value. So how do you see the team moving into the trade deadline? What do you see the team trying to address, I guess, first part, and what are the assets they use to address that?
Yeah, I think that they're going to try to make some moves just in terms of freeing up some space on the roster. A guy like Mike Komisarek, if they can find a trade partner for him, well, that would be the ideal situation. I don't think that's going to happen.
Right.
Same thing with Tim Connolly in the minors. He's on the final year of his contract. I think they'd like to wipe him off the books and get him into a spot where he's going to be happy. But, yeah, aside from Clark MacArthur, I don't think they have any pieces that they can really afford to move, especially if you're going to be in a playoff race. They're not interested in moving young assets for kind of short-term situations. So if there's a move to be made, it's going to be, I think, a minor one. You might see, similar to what they did last year, where they moved a minor league player for another minor league player that has the potential of moving into the lineup either this year or next year. So yeah, I don't expect them to be that busy. I think the big piece that everyone's kind of thinking that they might move is Clark MacArthur, just because he's going to be a UFA after this year, and he might be a guy that you could get some value for. I speculated that Ryan Klo might be a good fit for Clark MacArthur since he's also an expiring contract, and he kind of provides that grit that Carlisle likes, and he could play on a third line, or he could even play on a fourth line and provide some offense there. But, yeah, I don't see him being totally busy this trade deadline.
Michael Trakos is with the National Post in Toronto. He covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. Michael, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys. Really appreciate it.
Take care, Michael. Have a good one.
Okay. See you guys.
Let's go to break. But before we do so, we remind you, send in your Illegal Curve game-winning goal predictions. Use hashtag ICGWG. Send it in via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You're listening to TSN 1290.
Drew, before you get in here,
yes,
I think it's very apropos that producer Timmy, who always spins beautiful music, is playing Cake, because Richie Pollock decided to bring in some random cake that was in the lunchroom, and he's telling me to take a bite out of it. That cake looks like it's been out in room temperature conditions for 2 days. I got to watch a hockey game tonight. I don't want to get sick.
I'm still going to take a bite, though. I got to tell you, your reputation for good food choices is not a very long one, so I'm willing to bet you're still going to eat that cake.
That's why when it came out that IKEA was serving horse meatballs instead of regular meatballs, I said, what's the problem? I eat horse all the time.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Michael Trakos from the National Post for having just joined us. This segment of the program is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper-fitting, custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226, or you can find them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, the Eastern Conference playoff race, we've been touching on it as we've been discussing the Jets games upcoming this weekend. But you really look at it, and, I mean, Montreal, Pittsburgh, and Boston, who have 40, 40, and 39 points, respectively, mm-hmm. are really running away with the conference. Of course, given the fact that the Southeast Division winner automatically gets the third seed, mm-hmm. you know, Boston is actually in fourth place right now. But like I said, they're only a point behind Montreal. After those three teams, there's clearly a middle class there, and that's Carolina, Ottawa, New Jersey, Toronto, and Winnipeg, all of whom are separated by a grand total of 2 points between, you know, as this case is, third and all the way through eighth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, still there, you know, the Rangers, the Islanders, and the Flyers are definitely within striking distance. 28 points for the Rangers, 27 for the Islanders, and 27 for the Flyers. And then after that, there's another step down to the Capitals, the Lightning, and the Sabres, who only have 23 points each. And then Florida brings up the rear at 20. You know, what's the key? You know, is it just a matter of the, you know, beating up on the lesser lights, or is it sort of taking care of business against the middle of the pack teams that you're up against that's going to be the key for these teams to make the playoffs?
A number of keys, but I think, first off, it's not too early to talk about this because there's about 20 games left in the season.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely.
And so there's some gaps you talk about, Drew, that could be obviously become more significant. I think for the Jets, I think what you do is you always are cognizant of the top eight, but I think for the Jets, you focus on the division. You focus on, first off, because you get that home and you get that three seed. But I think just in terms of perspective, you really have a better opportunity you have a good chance to take that division based on the injuries that Carolina faces, and you have some games coming up with them later on. And then based on the competition that you have, Tampa still struggling, Washington not really finding their way, Florida not being a good squad, you can say, you know, you can make a good argument looking at the division right now that this is the best team in the division. So as the best team, you should win it. And I think that's what the Jets should focus on. Now, of course, you want to catch the other teams anyways, but it, especially with a division-heavy schedule, that's the main focus to me.
As far as the Eastern Conference schedule goes, just on its own, and pardon me, the standings go, I mean, right now, I can't rationalize it at all. As far as the six teams that aren't in a playoff spot right now, the only two teams that I was right about were the Florida Panthers and the New York Islanders. As far as the Lightning and the Flyers and the Rangers, to me, right now, I'm shocked that they're not higher up. But you start with the Flyers, and they've had problems in goal. The Lightning have had problems in goal. all teams seem to be having injury problems, except the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight actually have no injuries with Lupo back. But as far as where we're at right now, I mean, it's completely anybody's prediction as far as what eight teams get in. I mean, do we really expect the Flyers and the Rangers both to not be in the playoffs?
Well, that's
come end of April. I'm going to be shocked if one, if not both of those teams are in it. There's just too much talent there.
Let me ask you this question. At what point in time do we look at the Flyers and the Rangers and just shrug our shoulders and say, maybe they don't have it for whatever reason this year?
It's a good point. And the Rangers, which we talked about last week, and you see them in person, you say, well, what we spoke about in the first hour, their defense isn't good enough. You know, their depth on their forward lines is questionable. Their chemistry overall seems to be questionable, and whether or not they're reacting to John Tortorella. But also, I mean, their wild card, of course, Drew. By the way, I think the Rangers get in. I think the Flyers very well may not get in, but I think
the Flyers, by the way, have played the most games. Sorry for interrupting you there for a second, Richie. Flyers have played the most games in the NHL. They've played 29 games already.
Yeah, so they only have 19 left. But there's a wild card there with those two teams, and that's that they're not afraid to make a move. You know, you acquire Rick Nash, the Flyers have never been afraid to make a bold move. So who knows what rosters you're dealing with. But I think on that point, the trade deadline is April 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday, April 3rd. It's almost too late. And we talked about it on our midweek show, NHL Midweek, with Frank Provenzano, the assistant general manager in Dallas. How do you gauge like what to do based on the deadline? The deadline is April 3rd. The season ends at the end of April. So it gives you about three and a half weeks with which to play with those players. So to me, I'm wondering if teams don't make moves in the next week or two.
Almost like the NHL trade deadline is April 3rd, but each team has sort of an internal trade deadline that they want to, you know, they make a deal in the next week, and they get 6 weeks out of a guy as opposed to 3.5 weeks out of a guy.
If you're the Rangers and you're not sure if Mark Staal will come back, well, it might coincide. Staal's return may coincide, of course, with the trade deadline, so they'll know. But if in theory you didn't know, if he wasn't coming back, why would you wait to make that move to give yourselves 3.5 weeks of a player on the back end when a guy could help you for 2 months and it's a clear need?
This goes back to what we were talking about with the decisions that, you know, Chevy is going to have to make with the Jets, whether it's Antropov or Hainsey or any move in general. If you're making a move, not only do you not know if you want to move that player, but you don't know what you're getting that player for. You don't know, you know, with 2 weeks to go before the trade deadline, am I possibly going to give away a guy for a draft pick? Pardon me, am I going to possibly give up a draft pick to get a player? And when what am I giving that draft pick up for? I'm going to lose him anyways. I'm giving up a draft pick to not make the playoffs. There's a lot of teams in a position where not only do they not know if they're going to go on a long playoff run this year with their teams, they don't even know if they're going to get in. So it's really a situation of Russian roulette, really, with GMs and deciding what types of moves they want to make. But, you know, getting back to the Eastern Playoff Conference race, Richie, you know, the Jets right now are, it's hard to believe, but are one of the hottest teams in the East, up there with Pittsburgh and Boston. And I think we're going to hear this ad nauseum for the next 6 or 7 weeks. But I think the best chance they do have, and you mentioned it earlier, Drew, is winning that division. Because and they've got the two home games coming up against the Capitals. The Panthers might be finished last. They're last right now. But right now, I think, Max, you've got one team right now that's going to get in that division, because you've got the Atlantic, and the Atlantic might very well put four teams in the playoffs.
You don't know. It's true. It's possible. But one thing to keep in mind, you know, you look at the Jets right now, they've played 27 games and they have 30 points. Washington's played so one less game. They've played 26 games and have 23 points. So they're 7 points back with only one game in hand. Whatever the point situation is heading into Thursday, Friday, if you're the Jets and you win both,
you've eliminated Washington.
You're 11 points up, notwithstanding what happens over the next couple of days. You're essentially, you could be 11 points up with 16, 17 games to go. That's in this day and age, with the shootout and the overtime losses and all the division teams playing each other and all the meaning somebody's got to get points, and that's almost insurmountable.
Well, and that's why you look at this weekend. And this weekend, I mean, you know, forget about Carolina almost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know you can't forget about Carolina because the division is right there for the taking. But say Carolina wins both, you know, their games this weekend, and good for them. If the Jets can take care of their own business, to be chasing Carolina from the fifth position as opposed to the third position, as opposed to the eighth position, does make a significant difference, because you know, last year, even though the Jets were all, you know, up until the last couple weeks of the season, even though the Jets were within striking distance, only a couple points out of the playoffs, they still had so many teams between their last playoff spot and where they were. Whereas this year, if you can be right there without having to leapfrog all those teams, I think that makes a significant difference.
And that, I was talking in terms of perspective of team, wanting to win the division and wanting to be that best team in the division. But you make a good point there, Drew. And another point to take into account is the teams that you're competing with for 5-8. Or 4-8, but 4 is going to be Boston or Montreal likely. So 5-8. The teams you're competing with, guys, are teams right now in other divisions. You know, the Senators, the Jersey, and Toronto. And the Jets are, of course, 8. Rangers are 9. Those teams don't play in the Southeast.
That's right.
And you have more games against bad teams than they do. I think I read something about 2 weeks ago. The Jets had the easiest schedule in the conference left based on who they were playing. So those teams, you know, when Toronto's playing Boston, you're tough, that's their best team. To me, that's the best team in that division.
Yeah, and they're going to play them a bunch more times while you're playing against Florida Washington.
Richie, this breathing room that they have, and until Tampa Bay gets their goaltending situation figured out, this type of breathing room that the Winnipeg Jets have right now, 7 points up on Tampa and Washington, and 10 points up on Florida. This type of breathing room won't exist if you let points go tonight, if you let points go tomorrow, and if you let points go next week against Boston, against Washington. That breathing room is gone. So, you know, Gary Lawless mentioned this after the game against the Rangers, and he posed it to Claude Noel, and I think he's right. If any time you want to be greedy, it's now.
Well,
this is where you separate yourself.
And the players know this. You know, the players know this, you know, Evander Kane speaking to Chris Johnson today, you know, he says that every single night he's watching the standings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is a guy that, you know, most people wouldn't think of Evander Kane as being, you know, especially engaged, at least off the ice, based on, you know, his reputation, but that's all it's worth. Evander Kane says he checks the NHL standings every day. They know where they lie, and they know how close they are to being right on the cusp of being a, you know, a division leader.
Give Kane credit, by the way. All these players, you say, we don't check the stand. Give him credit. I mean, every player checks the standings. At least he acknowledges it.
If you don't check the standings, then, I mean, how dispassionate are you about the game that you're playing?
Well, they always talk about how you can only control what you can control in the next game. But you want to know. And I like that he admits that.
Well, of course. I mean, you look at the schedule and everything else, and this team knows that you take care of business this weekend. You do well in these two games against Toronto and Ottawa. You're right up there.
Well, for Ezzy and I, it's great because we look at our schedule, Legal Curve, and NHL Midweek, and we see that you're not here for the next 4 shows.
That's true. I am gone. This is my last show for 2 weeks. So you guys, I turned the car keys over to the you know, the inmates are running the asylum for the next 2 weeks on a Legal Curve. Let's go to break. When we come back, Mike Hyka from the Dallas Morning News is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.